On the 10th of June, 1894, 400 people, men, women and children, were on the pier over here at Kaywar, as we call it, Clockmore, waiting to be taken to Westport Pier to get a steamer to bring them to Scotland. It was the Burns and Laird Elm, and five boats were to take them, but only three arrived, so 400 people had to be packed into three hookers, which meant they were all overcrowded through no fault of the captain's. And just as they approached the pier in Westport, it was a lovely calm day. The boat capsized, the Victory, and people were thrown into the water. Those that were down in the hold or trapped under the sail were drowned, so 32 were drowned, and their bodies were brought to be buried in Kildownan Cemetery, 1894. That was the big tragedy. So it's just out the bay there, as we see. It's lovely, calm waters, a day like today. This here is the drowning. See the names. We can come in here. The quality of the iron that was in those days, that's over 100 years old, and still, even in this saline environment, salt, still. Now, these are the... I noticed they were mostly all women. See? Mostly all women. Margaret, Winifred, see? Nancy, see? And the reason being was the boat was so overcrowded that the women and the old men went down in the hold, and the more adventurous stayed up on deck to see it. So therefore, when the boat capsized, they were trapped inside. And we talked about this. Pat O'Donnell, his grave is there. This man here, he was seven. Could you imagine a man being 75 years of age going on migratory work to Scotland? And he was died, and his daughter Margaret, she was deaf and dumb. This girl is buried in Ross Turk, and there's a Cooney. Joseph Cooney. He's buried in Ballycroy, across from Turnragee, from which he was, from where he was a native. It is a lovely setting, though.
Oh, the far tawny fields are calling me away, and the stretching in the bothies on the straw, and the old men moaning at the breaking of the day, and the trekking when the morning's in the raw. There's the cry of the women for the souls they're keeping clean, when the rain rattles blazes on the zinc, when a blaspheming devil spits his atheistic spleen, and a hawker whispers hoarsely for a drink to the spirit-broken, quiet-spoken, tarty-hawken men.
To get back to working in Scotland, though, what age were you when you went over first?
11 and a half. That was 1904. It's still there.
That's right.
1904. I only went out to see the ship, the uncles was out, ferrying out the people, you know, on the back, their luggage and tack. But, by God, there was an uncle of mine, a gaffer, you know, from Inispigil over there, and he took me in and paid my way. It was only 7 shillings from out there, full fare to Glasgow. It was cheap. That's where we started first, 1940, the first year I went, in Girvan. And we shifted around through the country, shifted to another place near Girvan called Saltcoats, Ayrshire, Nearshire, Saltcoats, and so on. They shifted different places from that field had been finished. We shifted to another farm around about, you know. And Kilwinna, but it's where we finished up at Kilwinna.
What was the job that you had to do?
Picking wood, aye.
And how many years did you do that
for? Oh, I did it for a number of years, until I got strong, you know. And then we went on a different job, and on the farm. We'd go harvest, you know. But it was a great job for the young infants, like. They'd go, they'd be on their knees with a bag around them, you know. Oh, the wages was only threepence an hour when I started first, you know. Threepence an hour, 15, but 10 hour day, 10 hour, no half day Saturday, 60 hour week. And if you had a full week coming, 15 bob of the old money. 15 was only 75 pence now. The old money is in my head.
Yeah.
Well, that's more. Everything was cheap. You know? Everything was cheap. He's still going.
You don't remember? Do you remember the other places that you would have gone to in Scotland?
Oh, I do indeed. Oh, I was around Edinburgh, Stranraer, and Edinburgh, and Perth. Oh, I travelled a lot of Scotland, you know. You might be with a different gang the following year and go to a different place, you know. That kind of way. Oh, I know a lot about Scotland. And a little village in the north of Scotland called Braco and Meath. I was in Dundee. Oh, I spent 3 or 4 years around Dundee. Newport, and it's Cooper 5, Strathniglo. Oh, I travelled around, you know, and all those places. And New Tye, and Farfar, right? Glamis Castle. So the Queen was there at Glamis. Posh place, like. Oh, I've been in a lot of places. Corstaffan, it's near Edinburgh, like. Well, in a farm there called Red Hughes. That was the name of the farm there. You forget, you know. And a farm up near Braco, like in the north of Scotland, Kirallen was the name of the farm. I was two years there. Kirallen, different names. Another farm, Drumdewey, like near Braco there. And then another village near Braco, 5 or 6 miles away, called Dunblane. Name of the little village. I was in a farm there, Burnside, called the farm. There, oh, different names.
But it only applied to three parts of the country: Achill, Erris, and Northwest Donegal. Nowhere else. Those are the people of Aran Islands, or the people of Inniskay, or the people of Clare Island, or those didn't. Just those three particular. And I often wondered why. Why this tradition applied to three specific areas. And they were all on the West Coast, and the reason being they were overpopulated, there were communities that were closed in. So you see, what they wanted in Scotland were, they wanted mobile working force that would go from one farm to the other. So what the merchants did, they started in Ayrshire, because being coastal, it doesn't get much frost, so it's very suitable for early potatoes. And they got the farmers there and throughout Scotland to sow the potato. And when it was sown, they said, right, we'll pay you so much an acre and we will harvest them. So the farmer had nothing to do with the harvesting of it. So therefore, they needed mobile workers who would be prepared to go, when one farm was finished, go to another and another and another. And they would finish up in the month of October up in near Dundee on the east coast of Scotland. So they travel. So therefore, these people from Achill knew every inch of Scotland. When I grew up, I knew more, and I've often said this, I knew more of the geography of Scotland than I did of my own country, listening to the fireside in Gaelic, and they'd be talking about. And I remember the first time when I went to Scotland we went on our honeymoon actually there, and we took the car, and going through, I stopped the car, and there, Ballantrae, the Maidens, Garvan, Maybole, I knew all the names of the farms. I could rhyme them off.
Can you remember anything about the work in Scotland that you heard the others talking about? Did they have a good time? Were they treated well?
No, they wasn't, no. Badly treated. Oh, they were like this, the blacks from Africa. Except that you weren't fenced in, you know.
But you didn't do that work yourself?
I did. When later on I came down, I put a trial, I went down, I waited, not a long time, but I went into the city, then I was working with the builders, you know.
Did many people from around Dahomey here go to Scotland?
All Erris, every bar in the bar knew Erris went.
And would that...
And all Achill. No, that's the island of Achill. There was 1,400 passengers. And there was no flush lathers, respects here, nothing, do you know? And you had to bring your own food with you get no food on the ship.
And were you lying on the ship like
that? We were on from Thursday night till Saturday morning, about 7 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, and she docked in here.
Did the people from Dahomey, though, go to Scotland now?
They did, not now.
When they were going, they went to work in Scotland?
They didn't want to work in Scotland.
Just like the Achill people?
They are
the same. Not to England?
And they wouldn't hear the child that was waiting on him to be 14 years. Even before he reached, 12? He went to Scotland with his father. Mm. Maybe his mother too with him. Mm. Which was the worst, biggest sin you could commit.
What?
Yeah, to bring them at that age from the school, you know. And they had to get up in the morning about 4 or 5 o'clock.
Well, no, the tea itself.
For these old potato muffins. They were tired.
So can you tell me then what you were doing in England? What was the first year you went to England?
That's 1923.
Mm. Where did you go to work?
I went to Newcastle. Newcastle and Tyne. Yeah.
What kind of work were you doing there?
We were hoeing turnips, you know. Singling turnips with a hoe. It was my first encounter with a hoe, do you know? My dad showed me how to do it.
Oh, your dad was over with you, wasn't he?
He died that following year. I had to go on my own. That's the first pencil I ever put into my hand as a hoe.
I put my season in then, and I never was a day. I was picking all the time on my two knees. Be a bag around on you on your knees, and last year a man hawking for you for the day. I wasn't able to hawk, I was too young, 11 and a half. But I put my season in. The wages that time was very small. Things was cheap though. The wages was only threepence an hour. When you'd have the full week, you'd only get 15 shillings of the old money. But you get something for that. Things were cheap. The loaf was only threepence. The ounce of tobacco was threepence. The pint of beer was only threepence. Tea, very cheap. Bacon, 8 pence or 9 pence a pound and so on. You could live cheap, like. And that fared on all right. And then when we were coming home, there was no ship to bring us. We had to go to Glasgow and get the ship from Glasgow to Dublin. And the train from Dublin to Achill. And the train was very slow that time. There were no fast trains in it that time. Take about 10 or 14 hours. 10 hours to cover the journey from Dublin that time. Until we'd land home. Well, the same thing continued the following year. Went away to Scotland. We're getting keener on then. Went away to Scotland again the same way. We'd get a free house there. Plenty blankets and bedclothes and everything. Plenty fire, plenty coal. Well, that continued then all the time for a number of years. Until I began then, at the time of the last war, I went to England. I immigrated to England. Right? The wages was good, everything. But the food stuff was bad. You had a job to live. 4 ounces of butter and 4 ounces of bacon in the week. And it was very hard to live on that, which I had to live. And having your drink of beer then at the weekend, it would build you up a bit. And that's the way we carried on till you come home the next 6 months and so on. And until I was finishing though.
Our fathers were all in Scotland. And we didn't think it. We saw our fathers for 1 month every year. And I often think of the sacrifice those men made away from their homes for 11 months of the year. And while they were away, of course, the mothers, they worked hard. They had to keep the farms going. I did see that the turf was brought home and the potatoes were harvested and the hay was saved and the cows were milked and seed to. And the fathers came in springtime for two reasons, to cut the turf and to prepare the land for sowing the crops, and they were gone. They didn't come for Christmas. They couldn't afford to come for Christmas. So it's unimaginable today, isn't it? All my family were involved. My father went away when he was 14, and so did all my uncles and aunties. My parents married in Arbroath in 1932 after being working on the farms. And my mother came home then when the eldest was born, so three other children. So my father went to England, lived his life in England till he was 65, away from the family. That was the pattern of most Eckel people. My uncle described it to me in great detail in 1912 when they were going. A few days before that, they would go and they would go to the local tailor, so they would have clothes. Everything was done locally, and the local shoemaker, and the boots were made locally, the shoes. It was based on family relations. So they would come, for instance, my uncle, who would have been a ganger, they would come to him to see to take this boy or that, and he would. So then they were put on the yawls and they sailed out to the hooker, or they would be rowed out. And every boat on the island was commissioned to get, imagine getting 1,000 people all day onto it. And then he was only in 1812, he was 16 years of age. And what he remembers coming to when the yawl turned up, came alongside the steamer, three rope ladders with Scottish sailors on either side coming down the rope ladders and helping, seeing that everybody, and it was like a huge wall. Could you imagine? Now, he said what made an imprint in his mind was the older women. It was a frightening experience for them to get up those ladders. It was all for young people. And he remembers some of them actually being bodily lifted on and terrified. So then when they got on board, then the woman would make the tea and see that there was food for those and her on the boat. And they carried their own food with them until they got to. And it was evening then. It was sunset when the boat lifted anchor and sailed north of Blacksod, past Erris and up the Donegal coast. And it brought them straight to Girvan. It didn't bring them into Glasgow. So when they got there, the lorries and carts were there waiting for them to bring them to the different farms. Everything was so highly organised by the merchants. Now, I have an uncle, he's 93, who worked in Scotland, who went away when he was 14, if you want to talk to him. I'll ring him to see would he talk to you. Anthony, well, Tom and Shaw. Cogger me show, ta Bertrand Shaw as RTE, I'm a able to know his law for free, all of them, father. Harder lahur of lake, famous holiday, okay? Harder lahur tradition do ya, half past 12. Okay. Right, okay, Anthony. It's not. This fella's 93.
And where is he living, Thomas?
Just 100 yards over there.
Oh, yeah.
I was born in that house. He's my mother's brother. And he went away when he was 14. He knows every inch of Scotland. And he was in England, he was 65, every inch of England.
How was it organised that you'd go over? Did a group you go together or would you go on your own?
We didn't go on our own. We went in groups. They went in groups such as squads. Maybe about 20, around about 20, roughly about 20 or 30 people used to go into a group from around about here. Huh?
Do you know the terrible thing that happened in 1937 over in Scotland?
I heard about that, yes. Yeah. Yes.
What did you hear about it? What did you hear?
Well, of course, that these people, of course, they were in this place and they got burned. And that was all. It was an accident, I suppose. It was supposed to be an accident.
You never heard how it was started?
No, I didn't hear it was started. No. Never heard how it was started.
And then there was another one before that, wasn't there, when they were going out on the hooker?
There was, of course, there was an act, there was a drowning, but that's that happened before I was born.
Did you don't ever remember?
Oh, I heard them speaking about it, of course, that these hookers was going into Westport, and some people, of course, they must have gone to one side of this hooker, and too much water, she turned over.
Thank you.
What time are you going to bed, Anthony?
About 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Okay. No. There was nothing here in Achill but immigration. I worked in Heddens, I worked in Peacefoot, potatoes, beet, anything you could think of, anything I could earn a shilling at. I worked in all kinds of weather. It didn't do a bit on me. Because when I was young, we had to work. But one thing about it, about Achill people, as I'm on about it, when the war started in 1939, and we all went over, we were conscript labour, they came from Derry, and they came from Limerick, and they came from Dublin. And, you know, there was people sent over, and I went over there to work, and I'd seen Bethel lying in a coffin, the sign that was on them. And they never worked in their life, and they didn't know how to work. And we worked the Achill people, and anybody came from Donegal and Galway, because they were used to it. I know when I landed in Butterford, the Lord protect and save it, there were people that went all from Limerick and them towns, and they didn't know how to catch a shovel.
Did you go with your father to Scotland?
No, I did not. I did not. My father here, he used to be a coast guard, like when the war was on. And at the time that I went to Scotland, my father waited at home. And I went to Scotland with my sister. In fact, I have the picture with squad, if you'd like to see it. We were in it. And my father waited at home here, and I went to Scotland and my brothers and sisters, you know. And the conditions was very bad that time, you know. They had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they'd have to have a couple of ton of potatoes dug at 8 o'clock. That's in 4 hours. You call them grapes. A grape was one man digging and the other man picking. Do you know? If the merchant got an order for potatoes, well, you'd have to get up rain, hail or storm, and dig the potatoes, you know. Well, trade of God's truth, the accommodation wasn't the best at the time, before Father O'Donnell got the sanitary inspection. He got the sanitary out, and the farmers, and then the gaffers. I have a picture in there with Squad, if you'd like to see it. Bring it out to them, Tom. It's in the hall.
Yeah, I will.
But, anyways, that was taken in Scotland now.
That's Anthony.
That was 1927. That's a lad from Donegal. That's Charlie Braddon. That's the equivalent himself.
Anthony.
And that's my mate, Menace Sharkey.
My uncle.
And that's Johnny Sharkey.
From?
Johnny Sharkey.
From where, Anthony?
From Donegal.
From Donegal.
Anagra. From Dunlaw, Anagra.
Yeah.
Now, that's Rosie Mangan, a neighbour of mine.
She was in the village.
I was there. I was 15 then. That was my third year in Scotland, and that she was in a year older than me, and she was a lovely girl, and she died with TB.
Good looking girl, wasn't
and that's,
she?
That's Pat McGinty. That's his aunt.
My father's cousin.
That's his aunt.
My aunt Anne.
That's his uncle.
Pat.
And you know who I know? I think that man is now. Oh, he was very well educated. That's Johnny Rogers.
From?
from Donegal. And you know Bridge Rogers, that's working in, that's in Belfast. Well, I do often think she comes from Donegal. And I do often think she resembles him terribly.
She was from, she was, her parents were Gidor.
She's from Gidor, and he was from Gidor. That's my sister there.
My aunt, yeah.
And that's
the man, Tom.
That was the gaffer.
He was the one that did the, on the tape.
That's my cousin there. That's my cousin there, got her souls on. And that's my sister, his mother.
That's my mother.
And that's a neighbour. That's a neighbour. And that's his father.
My father.
Yeah.
They married then in '32.
That was taken 1927. And I was 1925, 26. That was my third year in Scotland.
When I was down around Achill and Dahoma, they were telling me that they remembered the steamers coming in and that the workers would go off on the steamer over.
I went on it.
Did you?
I'm from Dahoma Headfield, right into the town of Ayr. And I tell you one thing, there was a baby born on that boat come back at Achill Head one night, and me on it.
This is coming home, was it?
Going back to Scotland to work in June. And he was called the Duke of Achill. He was baptised. Now then, did you ever hear that?
I didn't.
Well, hear it now, that is true. He was called the Duke of Achill.
Is he still alive?
I think so. Unless he died lately in Edinburgh, he's still alive.
He's living over in Edinburgh.
He is indeed, he was living and grew a big man.
You don't know his name now, do you?
Well, his mother was gone anyway. Mm. But I couldn't tell you who'd be the father now, to be very honest.
She was just about to have the baby when she left
home. She was, she was to have
the baby. When did they come for them? When did they brought her?
Well, sure, they couldn't stop her. She was and going around Achill Head. Mm. The baby was born.
The Puma was the first boat. And there's the innocent born back behind him. He was born in Irish waters, and he was christened, and of course the captain had called to baptize or marry or sentence. He was judge.
Is and he still alive
then? And he christened him the Duke of Achill. And he wanted to buy him, that he buy the baby. And I seen that child went to school. He went to school over here.
He did.
And he come up from Rockhart.
He was out right through our village to school.
Yeah, and he was a fine looking young man. Fella. And he joined the Royal Air Force, the last war. And I'm sure so he was killed now. He is in the parachute regiment, you know. His father was a Sligo man.
What's his name?
McPherson.
You don't want to talk to Nadine? I just wanted to ask you how you found it when he was off away working.
I had to be with my ass and cat, shooting turf and milking cows and... Mm. I had 3 or 4
pounds. It was hard, you know.
Yes, I'd have to get up in the morning. I was an old lady, and his mother was alive here at the time. And I had 7 children. And I'd get up in the morning early, and have the children, or the cows milked and put in the banks. I'd come back, then I'd waken them for school. And give the breakfast to them, and get them off to school, and the old lady. And go up, then straddle me ass. And go 3 miles of a road to shift her. I'd be there at 6 o'clock in the evening. I'd come home again and start off milking and baking 2 big cakes, 2 ovens at the side of the fire, and bake me 2 big cakes and a big pot of spuds for the pig, to feed a pig. We should always have pigs for Christmas, to kill for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that, I'd have to do that for 3 or 4 weeks until the turf would be on the road. Mm-hmm. And then we'd have a day with a train and run at home, and you'd have 9 or 10 that come to you around the village, and they'd all gather to go through.
Yeah.
But that's the way. After that, then, the turf was the only problem. You'd be around the house for everything else, and you didn't mind, you know.
I suppose you were wishing he didn't have to go away at all, eh?
Oh, well, for the sake of the going to the bog, you know, and everything like that.
But I suppose all the women were the same.
Oh, everyone in the village. Yeah. Wasn't you alone? I did not wish belonging at that time to come. Because it was great making the fire. Like today, you would get any bad weather that time, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't put everyone out in the bog and having this, the bite we'd ate out was great.
Yeah.
And even the children, they'd be long on Saturday to come.
Yeah.
How many of the houses around here and how many of the people around here, when you look across this bay, would have been gone to Scotland or gone to England?
One from every house. One from very few houses didn't have someone without going to Scotland or immigrating. It was a way of life. It was part of the culture.
And would you just describe for me what you can see across there?
Well, as you look here, this is the Cawor Clockmore, across from is Achilbeg Island, and which is uninhabited anymore. People have left it, but people lived there until 1964. Across from it is the Corran Peninsula, which is on the mainland. That's where you see across from, you see the mountain, Clare Island, Crookmore on Clare Island, and to the west then is the Atlantic Drive, and all you see is the open Atlantic. There's nothing from there until you reach America from here.
Dreaming of the magic of the isles, and the spirit broken, quiet spoken, tarty hawking men rolling out a prayer in Gaelic in the wilds, and the Eriskals turning on the reeking straw again, and they dreaming o' the magic of the isles. O' the far tarty fields are calling in the springs, where a Scotch laird hollers down the files, and a madman moans about the children o' the kings that are starving on the magic o' the isles.
There's a story about the Achill Railway, isn't there?
There is.
What is that?
Well, the first train that ever came into Achill, it came with a load of carts. And the last train that came in.
And that was in the prophecy, wasn't it? Prophecy.
Yeah, I believe
that
it was. Yeah, it was.
They say it was, yeah.
And what was the first load of carts?
It was a Drowndon, you know.
So what was the last train then?
The last train was a Burnley and Kirkintilloch. Do you mind the bathy? Oh, you wouldn't remember.
You should have that.
I heard about it.
I did. I worked in it. I worked in Kirkintilloch, but not that year. No, but I worked. And so I said it was a Protestant. I mean, there are a lot of diehards in it. Unionists and Orangemen. And these young fellas, and one of the workers that was burnt to death. Those families wiped out. And he only came from England down to see his two sisters, or three. The door was locked. And they got suffocated, they couldn't get out.
And was it the boss that locked the door, or was it himself?
No, I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
they couldn't get the door, even if I broke out.
You see, they got suffocated right away.
Yeah. I think I remember that myself.
Well, that's the last train they came and tackled them.
You never heard any story of how the fire started, did you?
Well, there were different talents, you know. Some say it was done maliciously. Yeah.
And the strange thing about that was the train to Achill, the line was completed as far as Achill Sound, but there was no station or platforms built. The train had, the Great Western Railway was in operation from Westport to Newport. But because of the crowds travelling with the corpses, the Great Western Railway decided to bring the train and the mourners
to Achill, so it just finished at a line. And that was the first journey, the westbound train to Achill made, carrying corpses. Now, it had been prophesied in tradition, although we have no... there is no written confirmation that it was ever prophesied, but it had been in the lore that the last train would also carry corpses. And that happened in 1937 when 10 young boys aged 14 to 21 were burned alive in a bothy in the village of Kirkintulla. And they came that evening, they were tired when they came from Wisha, and they had just settled down for the night when the fire where the boys were sleeping. Their sisters were next, they couldn't get to the raid. The door was locked, they couldn't come out, so people think it was set on fire, the door locked. Of course, there's no proof. It has been said some years ago, there was a case where a wife of one of the would-be arsonists was prepared to give, she separated from her husband something, and he had told her that he was one of the people who set it on fire. And but the relations did not want to, they did not want to pursue it. It was so long ago they didn't want to pursue it. That happened about 15 years ago. There's another story told that on the beaches of Dunkirk, 1940, when they were evacuating the beaches, that one soldier then did admit it. But again, we have no proof that it was arson, but it's generally accepted here that it was. That's the story of immigration. So thankfully, immigration is finished. Sorry, the Kirkintulla. Sorry. This is the best place. As you see there, all young boys. So you notice three Mangan brothers, the only three sons of the Mangans in Pulla. And the youngest of those Mangans was 14 and the eldest 19. The Kilbane brothers, Vakil Sound, see it, they were brothers. So, bought the Kirkintulla Scott, 6th of 1937. So, they are all buried in this communal grave.
Would you read their names if you don't mind?
Thomas Cattigan, Vakil Sound, Patrick Kilbane, Vakil Sound, and Thomas Kilbane, Vakil Sound, brothers. Owen Kilbane, Shrines, John Mangan, Thomas Mangan, and Michael Mangan, Pulla, three brothers. They were the only three sons in that family, all lost. John McLaughlin and Martin McLaughlin, Saula, two brothers, and Patrick McNeely, Shraheens. And they are the 10 lives that were lost. And the last train to Achill carried those corpses in, just like the first train carried the drowning victims.
See you, Teddy.
See you, Thomas, yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.